thought, wow, 2 weeks ago when I was here, it wasn't quite as bright as it is now. It seems like not only have we had 2 more weeks of getting more daylight, but also the time change. And this is, I guess, why we wake up in the morning still dark, and we're okay with it because we had the daylight in the afternoons now. But it's good to see everybody out. And I want us to direct our attention. We're going to use Acts 12 chapter to talk about that some, but really this is a study about the Herod family as much as anything. One thing about the Herod family, when I lived down in Arkansas, and that is rice country. It's very flat. They have leveled many of the fields so that they can plant rice and flood the fields to have standing water. And we lived in an area, by the way, just a little bit of trivia, the world's biggest rice mill is actually in Jonesboro, Arkansas. That's because so much rice is grown there, and that's the biggest rice mill in the world. But when we lived out there, I got to ride a bike because it's really good terrain to ride your bike on. You don't have big hills, you get to ride pretty much, it'd be little gradual slopes, stuff like that, but I got while riding at about 4, 5, 10, 12 miles a day, and I learned something by doing that, and that is how hard it is when there's a little breeze. That you think about 4 or 5 mile per hour breeze, doesn't sound like much, until you're on a bike riding against it. And then you kind of realize how hard it makes it. And then we get to like 10 or 12 mile per hour breeze or wind, then it really gets hard. And I thought about that in the sense that the Herod family, as a family that you read about in the Bible, and they had about everything going on here, that they, you talk about the idea of glamour, of wealth, of scheming, of immoral activity, lying, of murder, all that's involved in the Herod family. And as we read about the Bible, we may kind of forget exactly as far as the background. And so we want to look in this lesson at the Herod family tree, if you would. As we do that, here's actually kind of a diagram of the Herod the Great. Now, we're actually going to start a little bit before then as far as how Herod the Great became Herod the Great. But one thing to notice in this family tree right here, you have Archelaus and Herod Antipas, and those are the ones we're going to read about in the Gospels. However, the other Aristobulus over there to the far, you'll be your far left there, that you find Herod Agrippa the First and Herod Agrippa the Second, and all those are the ones we read about in the book of Acts. And so you have these different children of Herod the Great, Philip, Herod Antipas, Archelaus, and Aristobulus. There is 4 sons. But really to understand how the Herod family, you have to kind of back up some as far as their origin, the beginning of the Herods. And the beginning of the Herods actually relates to the Maccabean Revolt. I gave a lesson a while back about the Maccabeans being about 160, 150 as far as the revolt against the empires of that time period. And a man by the name of John Hyrcanus, the first, actually, to be technically correct here, that he became one of great power. He was a Maccabean, and he basically conquered, he conquered Edom. And so Edom over, if you have a map of the land of Canaan over here, and you're looking at across the Dead Sea there, you have southeast land of Canaan is Edom. Now, of course, we know that Edom were the descendants of Esau in the Old Testament. And so he goes and he conquers Edom, and when he does that, he forced them then to convert to Judaism with a strong emphasis on force. And that is by the power of the sword. Basically, you are going to accept the traditions of the Jews and basically become incorporated to the Jewish culture. That's what he does at that time. And so then he goes and he appoints an Edomite by the name of Antipas. And as governor. And so that's the beginning actually of the Herod family as far as their power and might here. And Antipas was again a person that ruled on that area of Edom. And then his son, Antipater, eventually becomes appointed by Julius Caesar to become procurator of this area in 47 B.C. And so that's very quick. I know it's a very quick history lesson there about people who really don't read about the Bible. But the thing about this is, you realize that the Herod family always had a connection in one way or another to the Jewish religion. But they understood the Jewish religion because they had been taught it. They had not necessarily accepted it, but they had taught, been taught the Jewish traditions. And then as you go on, this Antipas then, or Antipater, has two sons. And this is where we get to the Bible at. One is by the name of Phasael, I think I say that, and he is given the area of Jerusalem to rule over. And the other son is Herod, who becomes known as Herod the Great. He is given the area of Galilee, north of Jerusalem. Now, the thing about the Herod family, and Herod the Great especially, is that during this time period, you have people that we read about in history, like Mark Antony, Octavius, and their struggles of power. And Herod the Great was able, in essence, to kind of play both sides of the coin. And he was kind of the friend of both sides, so that whenever one would win, he would actually turn up being more in power. Well, it goes back to Rome at one point, and the Roman Senate actually appoints him to be king of the whole area. And so that's how he gets all this region in, is actually under his control that we read about in the New Testament, all the area of Canaan and onward. And as we look at Herod the Great, of course, he's actually only mentioned a place part in one chapter in the Bible, and that is in Matthew 2nd chapter, which deals, of course, with the birth of Jesus. And you turn the Bible there, you find, of course, it tells about the wise men coming to him, and that they understood that through Scripture, they understood that the of child's be born, and they want to kind of ask a question about that. Where is he who is born king of the Jews? Verse 2. And you may kind of think about that a few minutes here, because when you look at the Herod here, Herod was a man, first of all, that you see was born in a great power. That because of his father and grandfather and even great-grandfather, that they were rulers. And so they were born into great power. At the age of 25, he becomes the head of Galilee, the ruler of Galilee. And so the person there, and actually he takes over in 47 BC, when he actually takes over power of Galilee. And then as you go on here, we find that his official title was a very interesting, because was it the wise men say, what's the question they have in Matthew 2 verse 2? Where is he who is born, the born king of the Jews? That was actually Herod's official title, the king of the Jews. Now we may kind of bypass and think, oh, we're talking about Jesus, but this was basically, you know, saying, so who's going to take the place here? It's the way that Herod understood this and interpreted that. And so he then goes on, and we find that he's ruthless, of course. Now in the Bible we find, and he's ruthless, because to go on down, when he sends wise men away, and basically with the instruction, when you find the child, come back to me, and let me know where he's at, because I'll go worship him. And then the wise men are told not to go back by the way here, but go back another way. And Herod understands what had happened, that he decides, verse 16 of Matthew 2 says, then here when he saw that he was exceedingly deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry, and sent forth and put to death all the male children who were born in Bethlehem and all his districts from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men. Now you read that, you may think, well, how ruthless this guy was, but this is nothing. As far as Herod himself had his favorite wife killed. He had two of his own sons killed because he was afraid that they were scheming against him. And so this was a man that did not even spare his own family whenever he thought somebody was rivaling his power. And so it kind of explains as far as what he did here. Like I said, he had his own family killed. And to show his ruthlessness, now here was a builder. Now we don't point out a few minutes how this relates to Archelaus a little bit. But here during his reign was a builder, among other things. He built the harbor city of Caesarea. He had some other cities built. He built the temple. Of course, read about Herod's temple in the New Testament. That was started in his reign of building this to try to appease the Jews. Well, as you look at this here, that however, he was so ruthless that the Jews still hated him. It didn't matter. They rebuilt their temple. And the reason, one reason it didn't matter is when they were building the temple, he had a golden eagle placed on top of the temple, a sign of the Roman Empire. And that to the Jews was blasphemy. And therefore, they hated him to the point that when he was about ready to die, about 4 or 5 B.C., now, which almost sounds kind of crazy because, or kind of like what? Because Jesus was born, I mean, here died before Jesus died, was born, no. Our calendar's off about 4 or 5 years. And so actually died shortly after Jesus' birth. However, that his instruction was when he was on his deathbed to gather people that had been part of the Sanhedrin, to come, have them come together, and when he dies, have them all killed. And he does that because he wants the Jews to mourn that day. If not mourning his death, at least be crying the very day he dies. Now, it doesn't happen that way because the soldiers and the people giving instructions actually didn't keep it, the instructions. They didn't do what he said. But this says something about how vicious this Herod was. And in fact, and as you look here, and one of the sources said, now Herod had altered his testament. On his deathbed, Aristobulus was supposed to be the one over this whole region. However, in the last second, he changed it. And he appointed Antipas, to whom he had before left the kingdom, to be tetrarch of Galilee and Perea, and granted the kingdom to Archelaus. He also gave Gaul Nostus. I'm probably slaughtering these words here. Anybody knows how to say them better, then let me know. Triconius and Panius to Philip. And so, this, why is it going to court? We would say today, why is it going back to Caesar? Because Aristobulus not happy with this, but Caesar basically through their process says, this is what here wanted, that's what's going to happen. And tetrarch here means the kingdom's been divided into four places and four parts here. And so that was Herod the Great. And then we had the second Herod in the Bible. And that is that we read about Herod had four sons. Remember that family tree earlier? Aristobulus, Archelaus, Antipas, and Philip. And these last three, we read about, really Philip, just read about him. He really doesn't have a part to play with Jesus or in that. But what happens is that after, in Matthew 2 verse 19, after Jesus is born, Joseph is told to go to Egypt. Go to Egypt. And so verse 19, but when Herod was dead, though the angel of the Lord appeared and dreamed of Joseph in Egypt. Now that's talking about Herod the Great. And then we start reading about Archelaus in Matthew 2 verse 22. But when he had heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea instead of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, and being warned by God in a dream, he turned aside to the region of Galilee. And so that's necessary to understand because Galilee actually, by this time, is under another son of Herod. And so he goes over to another area here where they go to Galilee. And Archelaus, as you look at, read about him a little bit, again, he was an official title of king. Not king of Jews, but king. And what he's noted for, among other things, is that he goes out and has 3,000 Jews killed one time. Now, you remember earlier what I said about the golden eagle that was put on the temple by Herod the Great? Well, during the reign of Archelaus, basically two teachers and 40 of their students decide to go out there and chop up that eagle. And so they go on top of the temple, they cut it down, destroy it, and as a result of that, Archelaus comes in and officially about kills 3,000 Jews. So again, very ruthless individual. And the Jews eventually, after about 9 years, appeal to Caesar. Caesar, really what all the Roman Empire wanted by this point is just to keep the peace, just to get our taxes and let us reign over this area and just don't create any problems. Well, that's not what Archelaus is doing. And so he's banished to Gaul, which would be modern day France. And you see here, he dies about 9 AD. Doesn't last very long there at all. And so that's us ending him. And then we go on in this Herod family tree, and we read about Herod Antipas. And refer to the Bible as Herod the Tetrarch. Again, it's one of the sons of Herod the Great. He's over Galilee. Remember where Joseph goes with Jesus? To Galilee. Herod the Tetrarch is there. Or Herod Antipas. And we read about him some, but he's most noted in our Gospels because of John the Baptist. Two points here. In verse 14, Matthew 14, verse 1, at that time Herod the Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus. Okay, and basically, this is the Herod that was married to Herodias. Problem was, Herodias is actually married to Philip, this Herod's brother. And John the Baptist had the nerve to stand up to him and talk to him about how awful this was. Matthew 14, verse 2. And that is, at that time Herod Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus, verse 1, verse 2, said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him. For Herod had laid hold of John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had said to him, 'It's not lawful for you to have her.'" Mark goes to the whole account here about Herodias and her daughter Salome and the dance in front of Herod, basically him making a rash promise, and Herodias wanted John the Baptist killed. And so he thinks here, this is, you know, again, God shows you how the Herod family reacts to things. They don't take very well to being told they're wrong. And they're very vicious. And so then we move on, and he comes back that Jesus refers to this Herod as a fox. Over in Luke 13, verse 31. On that very day, some Pharisees came saying to him, "Get out and depart from here, for Herod wants to kill you." And he said to them, "Go and tell that fox, 'Behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and third day I shall be perfected.'" And Jesus does leave this area. Why? Because this Herod had killed people. I mean, he had John the Baptist killed. And so again, part of family history. If you can stand away, they annihilate you. And they go on, and this is the Herod that whenever Jesus brought before Pilate. And Pilate finds out Jesus is a Galilean. And what basically Pilate has is a bright idea of listening to Herod because he's a Galilean. Let Herod handle this. And so in Luke 23, verse 5, it said, "They the more fear, saying, 'He stirs up the people of teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place.' When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew they belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also Jewish from that time. Now when Herod saw Jesus, exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, able to see some miracle done by him." In other words, some kind of hocus pocus, some kind of extraordinary thing here. But it goes on and said, "Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod with his men of war treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a glorious robe and sent him back to Pilate." So basically he didn't get the dog and pony show he wanted. And the result was that he actually, again, abuses Jesus, sent him back there. But that's the Herod here, Herod Antipas, that we're reading about in this case here. And so that is then the Herod in the Gospels. Now, by the time we get to the book of Acts, we are dealing with another Herod, and that is Agrippa. And this is Agrippa the First, designated that way. And so he's a great grandson, or the grandson of Herod the Great. And as you look in Acts 12 and verse 1, it's now that time Herod the king stretched out his hand and harassed them from the church. Then killed James, brother John's sword, and because he saw that pleased Jews, he foreseeth further seized Peter also. Now it was during the days of unleavened bread. Again, we see here that this man was interested basically in pleasing the Jews. And then, you know, we saw pleased Jews. Had nothing to do with religion. Had nothing to do with right or wrong, simply trying to please people. And it shows how little he valued human life. How little he valued the message being preached by the apostles. This reminds me of what Paul said about trying to please God or man. Galatians 1, verse 9. "As we have said before, so now I say again, If anyone preaches any other gospel to you than one you have received, let him be accursed. For do I now persuade men or God, or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. Here it is, a good example here, somebody that's simply seeking to please the people in this time. And as it goes through, he got what he wanted. And as you read through this chapter, you find out that the Jews were impressed by him. And in fact, we find that he gained the popularity he wanted. And then go down to verse 20. I know in between we have Peter in prison and his release and all that goes along with it. But you go down to verse 20, as we're just, again, concentrating on the Herods. It says, now Herod had been very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon. But they came to one accord to him, made Blastus, the king's permanent aide, their friend. They asked for peace. Now this son of Herod could give them, so they asked for peace. Because the country is supplied with food by the king's country. So on a set day, Herod arrayed in gold, a royal apparel, sat on his throne and gave an oration to them, and the people got shouting, the voice of a god and not a man. And just kind of imagine the splendor of all this here, the crown or and the throne and the robe and all this, people shouting this here. Again, he got what he wanted. He could give the people what they wanted, food. And so, his popularity though didn't save him. And that is, he found out that he wasn't a god. And the people found out the same thing. Verse 23. Then immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give glory to God. As he by worms had died, but the word of God grew and multiplied. Again, striving against the wind. Striving against God. And at that point, then we find the kind of end of the Herods of this far as this lesson. Now I know over a little bit later on, we have Agrippa, King Agrippa talked about, which is Agrippa the second. We'll talk about him when we get over there, to that part here. But let me just make some application, and then the lesson will be yours. And one point is the contrast between Herod the Great and Jesus. And the first thing is that their birth. Herod the Great was born in the great power. He was given power to him by his father and by the Roman government. And basically, again, he didn't have to necessarily work for it. It was simply his at birth. However, Jesus had power before his birth. That Jesus, and over in John 1 verse 1, said, the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was the beginning with God. All things were made through him. Without him, nothing was made that was made. It's hard for us to comprehend, really. At least it is for me to think about the one that was involved in the very creation world, the one that when it said God said, let there be, and there was, that the very word itself, Jesus, had that great power because of who he was, inherent power. The saying is, their wealth. Again, the Herods had extraordinary wealth, as many of the rulers of that time did. And we think about King Tut and all the gold and all the fancy things that was inside his tomb. And that, you know, a lot of the wealth of the governors and the kings of that time, again, it's hard for us to comprehend. But he had it. Jesus was born to a poor family. The very sacrifice offered after his birth points out to us that they were poor. And he never accumulated wealth. That was never his purpose. Did not have a house. Did not have any gold or silver. And to a point that as death, when they, in John 19, talking about his robe, and so they said therefore among themselves, let us not tear, but cast lots for it, whose this shall be. That scripture might be fulfilled, which says, they divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots, therefore the soldiers did these things. This here is the only thing, materially speaking, Jesus had. It was simply a robe. And so he never accumulated wealth. That wasn't the purpose. When you think about the glory, the Herods desired glorification of man. When over here in Acts 12 chapter, Herod Agrippa the first received the ultimate praise, wouldn't it? I mean, what greater praise can you say than the voice of God and not of man? Have you ever heard people sometimes praise because of their great abilities,
And we almost talk about it as if they are a god of essence.
That's what he received. On the other hand, Jesus sought to glorify the Father. That he talks about before his death in John 17, verse 1. Jesus spoke these words, lift up his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may also may glorify you. He came to do the will of God. To point people towards God. And then you think about the compassion of each one. Now, and as I point out a number of times in this lesson, the Herod family had no compassion. To the point of killing their own children. Of killing Herod the Great's favorite wife. He had 10 wives. This was his favorite. And the thing about King Agrippa here, of having John beheaded and Peter thrown in prison just because he wanted to please people. There's no compassion here. On the other hand, we see Jesus show compassion throughout his ministry over in Mark 8, verse 1. In those days, the multitude became very great and having nothing to eat. Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, have compassion on the multitude because they have now continued me 3 days and I have nothing to eat. And of course, then he feeds them. But he had compassion to die for them. To die for you and I. And when that gets to the point about their death. Now, like I said, with Herod the Great, the Jews celebrated his death because the end of cruelty, at least his cruelty, was over. That he couldn't do anything else now. However, when we think about the death of Jesus, yes, we understand how terrible it was. But when on Sundays that we remember his death, we also can remember he died so that we can have life. We can rejoice in the fact that he came to die for us. As I've heard prayed and said many times that we're sorry that he had to do that, but we're glad he did. And so when we look at that, we understand he died for us. Now we look at King Agrippa, the first here, and specifically we understand popularity did not save him. Popularity is not going to save us. It doesn't matter how highly people think about us, doesn't matter how many people like us, doesn't matter how much we accumulate as far as that popularity, it's not going to save us. Man-made power will not save us. Like I said, the Herod family was good at playing the political game at that day and age. Herod the Great was a master at it. And his sons were also pretty good at it. However, many great men have lived before us, and they're all gone now. You think about people like Winston Churchill and World War II and all what he did there, or FDR, or many others in our time period. Perhaps my generation would think about Ronald Reagan and others in the future, but all of them are gone. And so we realize that when we think about the recognizing the power and authority of Christ, as I said this morning, the Bible points out to us that everybody will eventually bow to him because he is the King of Kings. He is the only potentate. The Lord of Lords. And so Philippians 2 verse 8. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself, became and being to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore God also has highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name. That the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of those in heaven, of those on earth, and of those under the earth. And that every tongue should confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father. That we all need to recognize who the great King is. And that's Jesus. And so I just thought it'd be worthy of studying about the Herod family, because like I said, a lot of times we read about this family but have trouble connecting dots between generations and who all these folks are. I appreciate your kind attention. Go ahead and open your song book to the song we have selected here, 319, Only a Step. If there's anybody tonight that has a need for you come forward, or perhaps of our prayers or anything we can do for each other, anybody that needs to obey the gospel, then why don't you let us know as you stand as we sing.